Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio, Coffee Party Radio. Bobby Rodrigo sitting in for Dan Aronson on Press One for Democracy. Debbie Lynn Molyneux is also with me this evening. Hi, Debbie Lynn.
Hey there. How you doing, Robert?
I'm great. I saw something earlier this evening that, we need to stop that. I have background noise. I saw something earlier this evening that was interesting. Stevie Wonder was commenting on the Sanford trial, the Trayvon Martin Zimmerman trial that's on everybody's mind this weekend, and he said, so he reminded me, he has a slogan, and I decided to adopt it a little bit. He says, "Don't talk about it, be about it." And I've seen Stevie live, and he's one of the great human treasures that we have, great artist, and he's always been about love and peace and equality and treating everybody like you want to be treated, and he's lived a life. And I've heard him say that before when I've seen him. So I wanted to emphasize that to everybody at the beginning of the show, not just talk about it, to be about it. I'm excited about tonight's show. We're going to have Christina Tobin on with us. She is the founder and chair for the Free and Equal Elections Foundation. I work with the organization, and we have the big event in October coming up, United We Stand Fest, which is the kickoff of the bus tour that's going to go around the country to break up the duopoly of the two-party system, which we know is not being very successful in working for us. So I'm excited about that. And then the second half of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about the money in the criminal justice system. Specifically, we're going to delve into the privatization of the prison system as well. So we want to remind everybody to join in. This is a participation show, of course. We want to hear from you. If you want to call in, 646-929-2495 is our number. We'll get you in as soon as we can, as fast as we can. Everybody's welcome to join in. Please remember that this is a show about civil discourse and facts. So we do like those two things, don't we, Debbie Lynn?
Absolutely. And, civility and reason, we like one of our bumper stickers that we have for Coffee Party USA is to incite civility and reason. And it's just, it's one of my favorites.
Absolutely. And we tend to get caught up in this wonderful divide that our 1% media puts us in. These trials that they put on. You know, somebody mentioned to me the other day that the Amy trial of last year, whatever her name was, tells you how much I pay attention. They sold $48 million in advertising.
They always do. I don't understand why people continue to watch the train wreck, because it supports what we don't want in our society.
It is so true.
And if we would just give it up, we would be better off. I stopped watching about 3 years ago when I moved up to Portland.
I think it was Janine that mentioned the other day on one of the other shows the how it is wrong to have the televising of the trials. And the comment made very good sense, because we have a bunch of people who really don't know how it works from inside the courtroom.
Correct.
You know, this is one of the ways they tend to twist our opinions. You know, and of course, you know, they must be public. You know, the trials must be public. We must have public access to them. They certainly can't lock them up. But when they put the cameras in there, that really turned things around. That was a good point that you made the other day. Absolutely.
Well, and it does. I mean, having served on two juries now, there is so much I mean, there's only so much that the jury can do once you get instructed as to what the law is and what the burden of proof is. There's only so much as a jury you can do regardless of what else is going on, because you have to follow the law.
All the time.
And that is just the way it is. And so, you know, I feel for anybody who gets picked as a jury on one of these high-profile trials, because it is really, really hard to do. I actually trust juries more, having served on one. I really trust what they're doing, because it is so hard, and because it is the people that I served with were very conscientious, and we were all very conscientious about what we do. And so I don't fault what happened with the jurors, but the system itself, I think, has been corrupted, and we have crafted laws. And this is the part, you know, where we're going to get into, I think, later in the show after Christina's on with us. You know, we have crafted laws now that are systemically not just, you know, that are blatantly unjust, even, that are not really what we want for our future, but they do support profiteering, and they do support racial profiling, and they do support prioritizing prisons over schools. And there's a whole slew of laws, and this is all about, you know, again, the purchasing of our democratic republic. And this is something that we can get into. You know, we're all about here, you know, making the connection between money and politics to any issue you want to bring up. And I am sad to say I have more practice at it than I'd like to have.
Indeed, you know, and the great thing, for example, about Christina Tobin's appearance tonight, and what she is doing with United We Stand Fast, what we're all doing, is making sure that people understand that the Democratic and the Republican Party have locked us out to, they've locked us out to the process. That it certainly is not fair. And I wrote in the blog post, I wanted to know where it says in the Constitution that we're supposed to be ruled only by either Democrats or Republicans and no one else. And it struck me because in learning about Christine and the Free and Equal Election Foundation, it's so clear what the message is and what she's trying to do, what we're all trying to do, and as it moves right along with Move to Amend, Move with Free the Elected, everything the Coffee Party is doing, it all ties together with that we have been locked out of Washington. And since when is that allowed? You know, they're doing what they want, how they want to do it. And the smoke screens that the 1% media blows up, you know, I was reading today, for example, how I was reading two sides of a coin when they were talking about the filibuster situation going on in the Senate, and how one of the comments was, and one of the comments against the Mr. Reid's approach is that, you know, when he was the minority, he didn't mind the filibuster. And, of course, the other side is that filibusters have never been used as much as they have been since President Obama has been president. Mm-hmm. All those items. But the rule itself that was created in the Senate, regardless—I don't even remember when it started. I think it's at least 30 years old. But when the rule was created, it removed the process of 51 votes was enough. You know, now it's 60. I know that
to get anything
done.
It's not even a real filibuster anymore. It's just the threat of a filibuster.
Right.
I mean, it's not like Wendy Davis in the Texas state legislature where she actually had to stand on her feet and talk. You know, I did admire about Rand Paul. He actually did a live filibuster in his last session, and it was like, oh my God, this is what a filibuster is supposed to be.
Exactly. It's not supposed to be about all of a sudden we have to have a supermajority in order to pass a law, which is just another example of how Congress and the executive, the judicial, and the legislature have just thrown the Constitution to the wind. You know, it's like when you have words now mean something different. I get interpretation. You know, the way the Supreme Court is supposed to work is they are supposed to interpret the laws that were created and the execution of those laws, and they're supposed to use as part of their basis the reasoning that the law was made by the legislature, as well as how it goes against or with the Constitution itself and whatever amendments may or may not apply. or whatever, sections mm-hmm. may or may not apply. That has been thrown to the wind because they're using analysis that has absolutely no basis in the documents, no basis in the reasoning that these laws were created until it catches up with themselves. Now, of course, we have laws that are being created that if they look into the legislative history of the law, they'll see, well, we need to be safe from terrorism, so we need to eliminate due process from the FISA courts, for example, which is one of the clauses of the Patriot Act. So they do this, and now when the new, 20 years later, now when the court gets it, they look at the legislative history of the Patriot Act, if it happens to be in front of them, they'll be like, well, that's what they wanted to do. And maybe they won't even go back far enough to the Fourth Amendment and go, wait a minute, can't eliminate due process. That's not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
So the law, so the history of the law and the reasoning behind the law is flawed in the first place. It's amazing how they have a circular to me.
You bring up a point that to me is like something else that is kind of a pet peeve of mine, and it's kind of like, what do we do with these old laws that don't make sense anymore? Why can't we like remove them?
Well, you should be able to, and there's many of those, of course. You have, if you just look at one of the recent polarized issues, for example, marriage equality. All of the laws that were created around marriage equality, not marriage equality, but around same-sex partners over the
mm-hmm.
years that are still on the books. It's absurd.
Just
that subject alone. There used to be, funny, of course, being a young man, I read Penthouse. And one of the things that Gucciani used to do is he would have a section in the magazine that would talk about ridiculous laws that were sexually in nature. But it would talk about ridiculous laws. And I can still to this day remember maybe 10, 15 of them because they stuck to my mind the hypocrisy of them. You know, and that's what you're talking about. And broad many subjects, of course. There's just ridiculous laws out there. And I live in the South, and we are flooded with them. Just amazing. And I don't know why they're still in the books, but they'll pull them out when they're convenient.
I don't even know what to say to that. I just don't. But there is an organization, and I'll try and look it up while we're on. Christine's on with you. There is an organization that was founded to take old laws off the books. That sole purpose is about doing that, and I'll see if I can't find it because I thought, you know, that's a brilliant idea. We have
continuously add
more and more and more and more laws. I feel like that, you know. Like we're getting wrapped up by a boa constrictor or something, where pretty soon there's going to be so many laws we can't do anything that's not illegal.
Yeah, the bureaucracy of the duopoly. that's for sure. I find it amazing how bad we're locked out of Washington.
Yeah, and I just wanted to ask, just point out that when the Constitution was written too, you know, it wouldn't have been the Republican and the Democrats; it would have been the Federalists and the Whigs.
That's true. Well, and we know from our history that there, you know, the parties have not always been called the Republicans and Democrats, and what's Republican now wasn't necessarily Republican even in our lifetime. It was different in the 60s and vice versa and all of that, and there were other parties and et cetera. But what's going on, and all of that's wonderful, but none of that's relevant to the way they've locked us out now. If we don't have money, we're not getting in is really where we are. We're not lobbying. Somebody was having a discussion with me today about the NRA, for example, and we were talking about how the NRA and ALEC, and I think we talked about this earlier today, but how the NRA and ALEC were creating the laws, and they were responsible for the Stand Your Ground law. My comment to them was, well, the NRA was lobbying for our rights. And I said, well, the NRA is a lobbying arm for the gun manufacturing industry now. So don't think that they are strictly for you. I said, they're as much working for the corporations as they are for anybody. It happens to cross paths. You know, I have no problem with the Second Amendment as much as anybody else. But let's not be fooled that the NRA is some kind of an arm to the citizens, like any other lobbyist group, they're bringing money to the table just like anybody else. And people need to understand what lobbying is all about and how we're locked out of society. And I believe Christina's with us now, and I want to bring her on the line. One second here. Let me get ready. And let me make sure. And Chris, area code 312. Is that you, Christina?
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you today? Actually, it's evening here, afternoon there. I believe you're calling me from Los Angeles.
You're right. I lost track of time traveling from one place to another, so to L.A. from Las Vegas. So thanks for having me on today, though. Appreciate it.
Certainly. I'm glad to have you. Coffee Party's glad to have you. Just so everybody understands a little bit about Christina, I'll just give them a little background on you, Christina, real quick. Christina is the founder and chair of Free and Equal Elections Foundation. It's a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization dedicated to creating open and transparent elections that give power back to the individual voter. And, of course, all of us at the Coffee Party here want that as much as anything. Christina and Free and Equal are continuing the work of breaking up the two-party duopoly we are now living with. On October 12th in Los Angeles, the United We Stand Fest is going to kick off the Free and Equal Campaign for Change, something that Christina created and we're all working together to do. Christina started her career as a nonpartisan ballot access coordinator, an expert in defending signatures and coordinating petition drives. Christina helped gather and defend over 1 million signatures for the Green Party, the Constitution Party, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the Libertarian Party, the Socialist Equality Party, and Independents. In 2008, Christina served as Ralph Nader's National Ballot Access Coordinator, helping to collect more than 500,000 signatures, put Ralph Nader on the District of Columbia and 45 state ballots. That's more than any other third party or independent candidate. Christina's recent activities have emphasized electoral reform and bringing visibility to alternative candidates. In 2008, she organized debates for the presidential and vice presidential candidates, and in 2010, Christina organized a series of debates for the Illinois gubernatorial candidates. Christina also ran as a Libertarian Party candidate for the California Secretary of State in 2010. And most recently, Christina co-moderated the 2012 presidential debate with media personality Larry King on October 23rd. The debate provided a venue for four U.S. presidential candidates from the Constitution, Green, Justice, and Libertarian parties to address topics that the Main Street debates censored, drawing worldwide attention to our two-party-dominated electoral system. So, Christina, obviously you are an insider, and obviously you know what you're talking about. And I'm so glad to have you on the show to talk about the United We Stand Fest and about yourself. And please tell us what's going on lately with the United We Stand Fest.
So honored for you to have me on, and that's quite a rap sheet there. Thank you for that introduction. I started pretty young at 17 years of age. You know, when I saw my dad, Jim Tobin, wrongfully get knocked off the ballot when he ran for governor in Illinois, and my dad's been fighting taxes for over 35 years with his organization out there, Taxpayers United of America. And, you know, I've seen since 17 years of age how corrupt our electoral system is. And you know, all the problems we have from the NSA to the Patriot Act, NDAA, drones, I mean, the list goes on, war, drug war, and so on. You know, it all derives from having, the ballot box, you know, no integrity in our electoral process. And until we fix that, we're going to continue to have these problems. And, well, here at Free and Equal, we're kicking off a 10-stop university bus tour at UCLA this October 12th. A gentleman by the name of Dr. Ron Paul once said, if you ever want to bring about a revolutionary change, two things would need to be involved, the youth and music. And so I listened to that calling. And Ralph Nader, you know, as I worked as his national coordinator 08, he told me, you know, Christina, you know, the biggest, if I could change one thing in this entire campaign in 08, it would have been reaching out to the youth, you know, more, and going to the universities. So I've really learned a lot from these gentlemen and many, many other leaders across the spectrum. And here's Free and Equal today and what we're doing. That's pretty amazing.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. And it's great work. And it needs to be done, and I'm so glad you're doing it, absolutely. And you know, the United We Stand Fest, is growing leaps and bounds because, as I'm sure you can tell everybody, it was originally going to be done last month, and it grew so big so fast that the venue had to be changed. It had to be moved out to give it a chance to breathe a little bit. And now it is on the UCLA campus, and it's just booming. And the guest list, please tell us about some of the guests you're going to have.
Yeah, I mean, this is just the beginning, from Jesse Ventura to Amber Lyon, three-time Emmy Award-winning journalist, whistleblower, CNN, to Peter Joseph, the founder of the Zeitgeist Movement, Jill Stein, former presidential Green Party candidate. I mean, it's such a diverse group of people. I anticipate individuals like Cornel West, to Oliver Stone, Joe Rogan. I mean, we've got a lot of great things pending. And the music that, you know, we're announcing in the upcoming days is just one of the most well-known hip-hop artists in the United States, stands for a cause. And now we're looking at a big reggae artist, you know, very likely we'll be signing on. So it's just really affiliated with the Marley family. Try that for a hit.
Right.
But, you know, some really, really great, you know, leaders and you know, our world, you know, the two-party system is really, well, they've been intentionally dividing us for centuries and probably preaching to the choir to most people listening to your show. But for those who don't know, I mean, it's controlled by the elite, you know, at the very top, the Rothschild family, so on, that it's no coincidence they pretty much, they run the monetary system, the Federal Reserve, a private institution created in 1913, the same year as the income tax. That's no coincidence either. And you know, really taking the lead for an equal, and, you know, this presidential debate, I think you mentioned the one we held last October, moderated by Larry King and myself. We had over 20 million viewers, top 10 trending on Twitter, and I really learned. I'm like, oh, my gosh, social media technology is so powerful. And
absolutely.
What we really need to do is kick off a 10-stop university bus tour. So we're starting again at UCLA October 12th, and that's just the beginning. And finally, the reason for doing all of this is to ignite, to educate, to inspire, to create intellectual dialogue amongst our youth, because the youth are going to come out in full force, voting for the starting with the local races in 14, running for local congressional races. I mean, I, as you mentioned, ran, I think, 27 years of age for statewide office as a Libertarian in California. I would have ran green. I wanted to run independent, but it was like 100,000 signatures to do that.
Sure.
I didn't have the money for that. So it really, you know, we're really here to attract everybody, and we've got some tools that are going to help enable these candidates that run for office to truly have a free and equal chance of winning, and I can elaborate on that as well.
Christine, I have a question for you. And this is Debbie Lynn here.
Hi, Debbie.
Does your organization, Free and Elected, have a stand or a position on publicly funded elections?
Yeah, here at Free and Equal Elections, I mean, I really am not supportive of Citizens United. I mean, it's not a good thing. And money in politics is not a good thing. And until we actually, well, you know, a lot of people say, well, come out, Christina, and support a campaign finance reform. Yeah, we need that. That's great and all. But, you know, while we have the monetary system, again, called the Federal Reserve, that monopolizes our currency, you know, the operatives at the top are going to find ways, you know, like they could implement campaign finance reform. That's great and all. But the insiders are going to find a way to illegally, you know, funnel money to their campaigns. I mean, the Obama administration did that in 08, I learned, working at the top for Ralph Nader, that it allegedly, well, they did let down, allegedly we'll go with, let down the security measures on their website to illegally, some say, funnel unlimited amount of corporate money from corporations overseas. I mean, it's not a coincidence that Obama fell short of the votes for the Electoral College of that first state, suddenly came out, you know, very strong afterwards of these, you know, not honest tactics that are used within the system, again, that's controlled by the elite. So I hope I answered your question. In order to have true, quote-unquote, campaign finance reform, well, I feel that when we, through an election assistant that we'll be launching at Free and Equal, list every single candidate running for office, and we shine the money in politics. If somebody gets money from a super PAC, Well, then we're going to say, hey, look, that candidate's getting money from a super PAC. Oh, look who's on the board of directors. Probably not a good super PAC. People are going to be turned off by the candidates that are getting big sums of money. They're going to be attracted to that kid out of college or that mom or that pa, you know, running for office that just truly wants to make the world a better place. I think money's going to become a thing of the past. Parties are going to fade away. And that's just, it's really some great things are happening because we're going to be uniting very quickly here at Free and Equal Elections and building others as well. That's our goal.
That's excellent points. That's excellent points. You know, Christine, I've one of the things I advocate when it comes to the election process in the party format that we've been dealing with is I've been saying for a while that when I walk into an election booth, I don't like the fact that the parties are even listed next to the people that are on there because we're so locked into, I'm going to vote for this party, I'm going to vote for that party. To me, maybe one of the aspects of getting more people involved is you eliminate the party affiliations from it, and people need to know who they're actually voting for, which might help. I wanted to get your thought on that.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I've been heavily involved with working within both the National Green Libertarian Party. I was even a speaker at the 2010 National Libertarian Convention, and I saw firsthand from within that as a party becomes larger, it inevitably becomes infiltrated. And it really disheartened me last year when we held this presidential debate moderated by Larry King myself. While I think every state party, for example, with the Libertarian Party promoted the debate, the National Libertarian Party did not even publicize it whatsoever. And that was probably one of the biggest things I think that Gary Johnson participated in or did as far as national exposure was that debate. And so, I mean, it's parties don't work. You know, look at what happened to Dr. Ron Paul. They would rather crash the party than let somebody else take over, hence the Republican RNC and what they wrongfully did to Dr. Ron Paul. His son, Rand Paul, unfortunately, sometimes the apple can fall far from the tree. I always like to try to give the benefit of the doubt, but, you know, the direction he's going in, whether he knows it or not, every finger's pointing that he does, is not going to be the right one. Many say that the Republican Party, and I speak with a lot of leaders across the spectrum, you know, essentially fell short this past election, not the Romney campaign, but the Republican Party. Parties work independently of the campaigns. Intentionally fell short this past election, so they could blame everything on the Democratic Party. Run Rand Paul in 2016, and our government will still grow. And that's just not the direction we need to go in. So this national database, or that is the election assistant, and working and building with many, many other entities, I feel will inspire independents, individuals to run for office. Parties will fade away. Again, they don't work. And in order for us to achieve this, again, Free and Equal, we're a nonprofit. I would say 70-80% of our money donations come from small donors. And yes, we've been offered at UCLA or our festival, you know, huge money from corporations. I've turned it down. I have, you know, there's just no compromising is not an option. We want groups like, you know, for organic, gluten-free, solar-free, free energy, you know, the good businesses, the good people to come and sponsor, and we want to build those companies. And so it's been a waiting game, and we're getting over that that hurdle and pulling it off. And I urge many listeners who want to support us, you can go to Free and Equal, freeandequal.org, right off our nonprofit. And that's why we're here today. I mean, every $5, every dollar, $10 spent is in the right way.
I have another question for you, Christina.
Yes, sure.
And how, so are you at a point in time yet where you are encouraging people to run for office, or is this primarily educational?
What a wonderful question. I do anticipate that our 10-stop university bus tour, as we inspire the kids to run for office and people, just good people that are not swayed. You know, there's far more honest people. I always say there's far more honest people in the world than they're not. And I do plan on incorporating some of those leaders into the tour to have a speaking slot. And I want to promote open debates locally. Those universities we hit, I do foresee one day that there will be likely, we're already in the talks of having these free and equal courses rise in every single university, school, the tweens, high schools. that lumps together all the liberty groups and builds them and brings in leaders, whether it's Students for Liberty, NORML, Marijuana Policy Project, all the different topics coming together to build, and will be that umbrella group and pretty much graduate the students to become, you know, members or a part of such great groups. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be a great way to bring integrity within our education.
Yeah, so when you say liberty groups, are these going to be like connected with Ron Paul libertarian groups, or is this going to turn into another party, or?
Nah, parties don't work. The Constitution doesn't mention parties. The one mm-hmm. tool our founding fathers were missing was social media and technology. So they were missing that. And you know, here at Free and Equal, we'll not only have powerful tools on the social media technology side, but feet on the ground, having people engaged in the process, watching the voting process, the count. We're going to bring together leaders not only on GMOs, the drones, the war, but on electoral reform to talk about mm-hmm. the needs of what's the best way to do the voting process. Should we have open source software? Yes. Proportional representation, that's a great thing. And so my job, my role is to bring those leaders together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be learning as well. I don't have all the answers yet.
Oh, I know. We haven't even talked about redistricting yet. But I ran for office in California about 10 years ago at a local level, and as an independent against a couple of Democrats in supposedly nonpartisan race. So I understand the challenges that independent candidates have in just organizing volunteers, in connecting with and organizing volunteers, for instance.
Ron Paul, please.
No, go ahead.
Ron Paul, you're right. The hurdles are astronomical. It's a completely rigged system. The two-party system leads you to believe that your vote counts. Well, you know, does it really now? Probably not. Will it in the future? Absolutely, because history is on our side, and this positive, powerful, peaceful movement will rise so quickly. I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am with the amount of, like, guests and speakers and celebrities and musicians that are just, I mean, be a part of this United We Stand Festival, this movement. I do foresee the music industry opening up. It's been essentially production and movies, and it's all tied together. And you know, we're here to shine a light on our government. I do foresee, as we unite across the spectrum, it's so important to see this, that these seemingly divisive issues will fade away as well, because the system's planted that. That's what they thrive off of. They live off of. And as we become a healthy country, a government. From Jill Stein, Ralph Nader supporters, libertarians, right, left, alike, we're all recognizing that there's a lot of waste in our government. You know, maybe we need to cut it back a little bit, whether it's 20, 30, 40, some say up to 60, 80%, up to we, the people, to determine that. But when we do that, integrity will rise within our government. And I do foresee a great thing when that happens. Technology is going to advance. There's going to be cures for, I believe, everything. I believe there is a cure for, and if not already, will be. People are needlessly dying because of the size of the pharmaceutical industry, you know, and the money and the greed, and we don't have free energy. Well, because the oil and gas industry is, again, controlled by the elite, you know, run by, created, Rothschild, and so on, controls our monetary system, the Federal Reserve. So it all ties together, and once we fix that ballot box and we bring integrity within our electoral process, which we will, gosh, what a wonderful world we're going to be living in. I can't even wait. I'm so excited.
Absolutely. It's wonderful. You know, Christina, one of the things that is talked about on this show and some of the other coffee party shows is the Constitution and how it works in our society today. One of the things I tell people in the many discussions that we have, because we are transpartisan, we want every view as well. The Coffee Party and the Free and Equal Election Foundation, to me, is one of those matches, not just because you need to cross-pollinate, but because we stand for a lot of the same things. Everybody needs to be involved. And one of the things I say is that what makes the Constitution the basis, our basis of law, our legal system, so wonderful, is that no matter what happens, it tends to bump into itself over and over again. So when I hear from discussions that the founding fathers didn't perceive this, didn't perceive that. But the document is so well written, and the balance is there with the three branches, that even when it's corrupt in all three branches, it still tends to bump into itself and gives us as a people a way to fix it. Would you comment on that, please?
You know, you cut out a little bit there. I'm not sure what your question is. And Debbie, I wanted to also say, it's been a long traveling on the road here, but you asked about the Ron Paul groups. I didn't want to avoid that question. But, yeah, Students for Liberty groups, Young American for Liberty, Occupy. Man, Occupy is great. There's this guy, Greg Deckelman, out in Arkansas, has been so supportive. And I, thank you, Greg, if you're listening out there. I mean, just great people like that, leaders on the ground out in Little Rock. You know, we have a key speaker from Occupy we'll be announcing, who's a uniter, who will be speaking ahead of Normal, top national Normal for legalization of marijuana. So we're here to build those groups and bring them together. But in any case, your question specifically, Robbie, I missed
my question. My question was is that I tend to believe that regardless of the problems and the corruption that are in society, I believe the Constitution is such a well-written document that it gives us the ability to fix what's out there, because when the problems come up, the document, the issues tend to run right into the Constitution. It bumps into itself. Even when it's something that the Founding Fathers could not have known about, whether it's nuclear power or the level of terrorism we're at now, or like you said, social media. But the document tends to give us the ability to correct anything if we always back up and use it, and the actual language and the words that are in it kind of give us still the way to go here. Would you comment on that, please?
Well, I guess, I mean, regarding the Constitution, you know, Article 1, Section 3 of the state constitution, nationwide, is all elections shall be free and equal. And, you know, I'm a strong supporter of the Constitution of our founding fathers. Were they perfect? No, not by any means. I mean, they inevitably kind of got pulled into the whole party system, I think. Primarily thanks to Andrew Jackson, but there's always one. You can't have any bad, you know, not good seeds on the inside. And but, you know, in any case, the one thing they were missing, again, was the tools, social media and technology. And I do see that in order, some say, to get back to the articles, to the Constitution, that is, government would need to be cut back up to 80%. I don't know. I mean, again, it's up to the left, right to decide. And as we start to pull together and realize, whew, we have been played by the system, the money, the elite, and the direction they want to go in, and it's a really scary one. You know, I want these kids, you know, that are here today to have a future, their grandkids. I mean, I really, myself even, you know, all of us today, I mean, it's this is our last chance to save the world, and we will, confident we will, and I'm thankful that, I mean, just being on right now, interviewing with the both of you, and, you know, you two dedicating your lives to make the world a better place, and the Ben Swans out there, the Amber Lyons, the Josh Tollies. I mean, the list goes on and on. The Dan Johnson, 19-year-old, now 20-year-old kid, of people against the National Defense Authorization Act. What a great leader, 20 years old, what, 60 chapters in 3 months? I mean, the amount of speakers we have, again, at UCLA October 12th, it's just so diverse. And so cool. Sean Stone, Oliver Stone's son. It's really, you know, the Constitution is definitely a very important thing to me.
So Christina, when you talk, I know that there's, you know, we're probably pinging a couple of people here with Coffee Party, because we have some folks here that are really feeling it right now, like with the farm bill and stuff going on. And I wonder, do you mind commenting on a couple of issues? Because you're talking about cutting back, you're talking about cutting back government and such, in some very specific, you know, and so, like, there are things that, you know, when we look at the farm bill, the ways that our government, or the ways that it's being proposed right now, is that it's cutting back food stamps for the poor, but it's still subsidizing corporate farming.
Yeah, as far as on what I'm learning, and I'm more of an electoral reform expert, I've learned a lot about the Federal Reserve recently and dipping into the music industry and how agencies and managements work. But as far as what I've learned, touching the surface for farm subsidies. Again, it's a system where, gosh, like you could be a small farmer and you're almost like forced to have to play within the system to survive. And, you know, it's just really not a healthy thing. Again, my role is going to be bringing together experts on panel discussions that have studied farm subsidies for decades, their entire life, political scientists, even comedians, making it fun, to organizations, to leaders, to celebrities, to journalists, to discuss these things. And when we actually have these conferences, these will be tools. Imagine these people running for office, not only the kids, 18 to 28-year-olds will be targeted initially, but there's a lot of people out there that were involved with the Woodstock, Vietnam. I mean, they're going to be coming and being a part of our movement and educating these kids. But these panel discussions we have on all these topics will be available on our website, and they'll be the kind of tools that will be used to educate these people running for office or just people in general, one-stop shop. You go on and see, hey, who's running for office, how to get on the ballot, how to run for office. Oh, these guys in this local area had a debate, 8 candidates. Oh, I want to listen to all of them. Where do they get money from their campaign? Oh, that one gets money from the super PAC. No, thanks. I like this guy that only has $500 in his campaign. He probably isn't sold out to anyone, you know, like, so it's just, but other topics on top of that, you know, I'm a real well-known on government pensions. You know, I traveled across the country for a couple of years and recognizing that government pensions are the number one budgetary problem in the United States. It's not war. It's not the drug war. It's not prisons. It's government pensions. And, I mean, there are some government employees that get up to, gosh, like over a lifetime, and when they retire at 55 years of age, the average lifespan is still 85, I believe, give or take, over $16 million. For one government employee pension payout, and that has created an unsustainable system. And while I don't hold fault that the individual government employees that are getting checks, what concerns me is that their checks will stop coming. And these are people who are relying, you know, on this for a living, and that goes really to my heart. And who made this unsustainable system? Well, okay, there's bad corporations, yes. There's not good unions as well. Unions, willing and dealing with Democrats and Republicans alike, and until we actually reform the system, well, we could reform government pensions, but that's going to be hard to do if we have those people in office that just are not like us. You know, they've sold out, and most of us would not. Then we have to come in and create a movement bigger than our government of independence, individuals rising, and of which many will be in the party line at 14, but come 18, if they have to, but come 18 when they are in support of getting rid of ballot access barriers and opening up the debate, we're going to see the you know, individuals for who they are as independents. So government pensions, national debt, I mean, it's left to the kids. I mean, we got to nip that, and we will. And it just has to be that way to get history on our side.
It is fantastic. Totally agree with what you're saying. And the while the issues are paramount, we have to have people in there first that are dealing, that are able to deal with the issues and are not going to be sold out without question. One of the things that I talk about, and one of the things I say with Citizens United, for example, I understand why Citizens United is a horrible piece of decision by the Supreme Court, but I always said that what it did for me is that it shined a light on how bad the money is in politics, because if you remove all the election money, you still got the lobbyists on the other end. They've been there forevermore. So, you know, as bad as Citizens United did, it helped really put a shine a light on to us, the people, how bad it gets, because now lobbying is much more in the discussion. The money just is all over the place. So if you remove the election money, you still got the lobbying problem. So now maybe, now hopefully we can fix all of it and let people who are elected work for us and worry about fundraising on their off time, which is another aspect of the money problem that I get into, that's for sure. The United We Stand Fest is a wonderful, wonderful idea and event and a process that you put together, Christina. I'm so glad to be a part of it. I'm so glad to know you, and wish you all the best. And anything else you'd like to say, I want to listen to it, so please.
Yeah, sure. I mean, regarding lobbyists, I think that as we You know, I've personally been up against last year a thing called Prop 2 out in Arizona, Prop 121. It's the biggest threat to our electoral process ever, meaning only the top two vote getters in the primary advance the general election. Could be two Democrats, two Republicans. And 2010, I tried to defeat it with the help of so many others. We were unable to do that because we were up against tens of millions of dollars more through the Warren Buffett, which is tied all the way to Russ Rothschild and so on. But, you know, from a very happy thing to hear is that we were able to defeat it by a 2-1 margin last October. And how did we do this? We held a panel at the Goldwater Institute. It's known to be a right-leaning group, but we had the executive director of the Democratic Party there, head of Republican, Libertarian, Green, and myself for a national perspective, and we spread the truth. And I traveled across the state, county by county, for a week with our executive producer, Marcy Forgrave, and we just nicked it, the truth right there. And what I'm getting at is that when people see the truth, when they hear the truth, and they will, because election assistance, money isn't going to go that far. And then suddenly, without the money, how does that create a job for the lobbyists? You know, it's all tied together and fading
right.
away over
That's
time.
Right.
So, you know, if you believe in our cause, free and equal, free, andequal.org, that's freeandequal.org, please study us. Please dig deep. We truly are pure. My agenda is just to make the world a better place and for people to live happier, longer lives. And that's pretty much it. And if you believe in our cause, please support us today. Mm-hmm. And I thank you so much for having me on the show, Debbie, Bobby. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anytime. Glad to have you. And be well and talk to you soon.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Bye, Christina.
Bye.
Well, I want to thank Christina Tobin for being on. That was a wonderful conversation. Debbie Lynn, what is your feel about what Christina had to say?
So, the big thing that I kept hearing, you know, I always am intrigued when I hear people talk about shrinking government, not that I think there isn't government waste. There's a ton of government waste. But I'm always, you know, as I voiced my question with her, is like, you want to shrink government where? Because, you know, it needs to be strategic and not across the board as the sequestration has done. Because I've, you know, watching the impacts on some of my friends from the sequestration right now. And so the one thing that I do hear her inviting, which I really appreciate and something that I totally stand for, is helping to create a culture, a society that is much more self-reliant. And one of the things that we have managed to generate in the last several decades is the creation of reliance on institutions for our livelihood, whether it's government or corporate. It doesn't really matter. But there is so much reliance on institutions for livelihood, and there's less reliance on ourselves for how we live our day-to-day lives. And so
no
that
doubt.
Education
no, no
and self-reliance is very welcome from myself.
You know, one of the things our host Dan Aronson talks about that really sticks with me is it's not so much about shrinking government or the size of government, but it's the value that we get. And I've actually become an advocate of that. I've always appreciated hearing that when Dan said that the way he put it, because as you say, you don't cut across the board. Of course, you have to do it responsibly, and government can work if it's run without corruption. If the constituents are the ones that are deciding what goes on, and let's say the majority votes for a certain way and puts certain people in government that vote a certain way, when they do that, they also cannot violate the rights of individuals. So
uh-huh.
If all of those things are going on and we are getting value, because if you, like you say, waste, if you take away the waste and you take away the corruption, you have cut government immensely. I mean, if you just do that
mm-hmm.
with the Defense Department by itself, you could shrink the Defense Department. I believe the study said it would be something like 20% before you even get to the contract part of it. And that's a lot of money.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. So I really liked Dan's approach when he said that, and it stuck with me. And so now when I have these discussions, because when you talk to, for example, from the conservative base, it's all about smaller government, and from the progressive base, and these are just generalities, mind you, they talk about, you know, larger government with the programming thing. But when you do it on value, it brings both sides together, in my
opinion. I don't actually hear progressives talking about larger government. What I
and that's not the right way to put it. You're right about that, right?
What I hear. And when you go back to the facts, I just to bring it back to a factual basis, government has actually shrunk under the last, I want to say, two Democratic governments, or maybe three, and it has grown under the Republicans. So I just want to be
factual.
Very true.
That is very true. No, that is very true. That actually is very true. I don't know if it has anything to do with the progressive agenda. I would submit to that, because I would say that our president and his policies are not necessarily progressive per se, but I'm absolutely right that he has shrunk the day-to-day business of the government, no question about
mm-hmm.
that. And absolutely, George Bush, for example, second George Bush, what number are we up to, 43, 40, whatever it is. Anyway, so
44,
the second George
we're
Bush.
We're on 44, yes.
We're on 44, at least 43, right? So the Bush 43 certainly grew government. He was a big scale. As Bill O'Reilly said one time in a debate with Jon Stewart, he's a big spending guy. And yes, he was. You know, and of course, this our government is a big spending government, but it is not spending proportionally, like you mentioned, factually, as much as what's
it
important.
It is not.
And
important. Every
that
time.
Is important.
And the thing, and here's this, and Janine, I just opened up Janine's mic, by the way, she's on, and we have a caller.
Oh, hi, Janine.
And I want to make one point here that Janine and I always make on Lunch with Ogden, and that is that every time that we provide a tax cut or tax loophole, it never gets added up as an expense of government, because we've just given away revenue. And that actually.
Well, that's true, and that is very true.
In a business setting, that would get written up as an expense. If you give somebody a discount,
that's very true. And area code 501, we're going to bring you on in just a second. And that's absolutely true. The other thing, if you recall, when they were talking about the budget, is if you remember, during Bush 43's years, they left the wars off the budget. They didn't have those numbers inside the budget.
Right.
Which was an amazing thing. Okay. So I never quite got that. But anyway, that to me, that's one of those more impactful statements about what our government was doing. But that doesn't seem to raise any flags. I don't know why. Area code 501. What's your name and where are you calling from? What would you like to say?
Hi, this is Greg in Little Rock. Actually the Greg that Mr. Tobin spoke about earlier. Greg Deckelman is my last name. First of all, I want to say I'm a member of Equal on the national team and as well as the Arkansas caucus here. And I want to thank you for having her on your program first.
Oh, well, you're welcome. And thank you so much, Greg, for calling in. I appreciate it.
No problem. And I wanted to publicly thank her for mentioning me earlier and stuff. But the one thing that I can bring to your program about your campaign finance reform is something that we've done here in Arkansas that was actually born out of Occupy Little Rock here. And it was truly campaign ethics reform, and it has to do with the money. We formed a group that was called Regnant Populus, which is the state motto, which means the people rule. And we wrote a bill, and that bill has now been passed by the legislature, and it's going on as a constitutional amendment to be voted on in 2014 that will take all money out of politics from corporations, nonprofits, unions. Nobody can give directly to a campaign in this state anymore once that passes, and only individuals. And it also takes away lobbyists giving any sort of gift, not even a cup of coffee, to a member of the legislature or anybody that's lobbying in state government. So it does that as well, and it makes them wait 2 years to become a lobbyist once they leave the thing. So
that's a wonderful caveat in that, and that is – That last item is as important as any of the others you mentioned. Absolutely, what a wonderful piece of legislation, and what wonderful news! I was not aware if that was happening. Shows you how much I know. Maybe I need to watch the news more. I don't know.
Everybody in every state can do this. It does not trump PACs and super PACs because that is federal law. But it
So, Greg, this is for state level elections, state and local elections only, not the Congress and Senate races?
No, it is for all of the races in Arkansas. If you're running for office in this state, you can't take money from a corporation or a nonprofit or a union or anybody. It has to be individual donations. Anybody running for any office in the state of Arkansas.
What is the likelihood it's going to get challenged in court?
We don't really think that it will, because we've been at this process for a year and a half, and we got it right, and we had it so right, we were prepared to take it as an initiative to the people to get it done, but the legislature wanted to jump on board, obviously, and look good by adopting what we had, and they adopted it word for word, and what they wanted out of the deal was to take the pay raises from themselves away. Believe it or not, they didn't want to vote on their pay raises anymore. We got them a commission in the state that votes on their pay raises that they get. And it can go down or it can go up. So there's not a trick involved with it as far as that's concerned. So actually paying a legislative person to do a good job, we have so many people that can serve that if they're trying to go to the state capitol here in Little Rock and they're coming from somewhere 200 miles away trying to, exist on a $15,000 that they pay a legislator, that's a little bit low. And so we want to make people who would be willing to come to government who are good folks have a chance to actually get involved and make a little bit of money. But we have term limits also in this state too, so.
Right. So I've got a couple things that are showing up here in the chat room, and one was my question was obviously based on what happened in Montana when they had a similar law in place that the Supreme Court overturned.
That's correct, and that's because they extended it to presidential elections, and we did not. That's the only office running for president in this state. It doesn't attend to that.
Okay. And then the other question was, how is this similar or dissimilar from the American Anti-Corruption Act?
Are you familiar with that act, Greg?
Yes, I am, and it's somewhat similar. Ours is so encompassing, and it really nails it down to such nitty-gritty fine language. It's a very, very well-written, very long piece of legislation, and because it is a constitutional amendment, we wanted to be very careful with it instead of just a law, because if we went to the people with just an initiative and they passed it, the legislature could come back and modify that, but they can't come back and modify a constitutional amendment.
That's a good point. Can you give me a website or information I can put in the blog and in the chat room for everybody?
Yes, let me spell Regnat Populus for you. It's REGNAT and then Populus, POP.
ULAUS.
I got it.
Yeah, okay. ULUS. Okay, sorry. But I'm just, I hope it comes through my voice. I'm so excited about this thing. You know, we're very excited about it here because we know this is the last election cycle that money is going to come into play.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be nice.
I mean, I talked to this last legislative session, I talked to Democrats and Republicans in the legislature that understood exactly what free and equal was all about, and they understood what we wanted to do with Reagan Populist, because they had friends that really were good people that wanted to be in government, but they realized what was really going on, and they couldn't fight against the system. And so we have quite a bit of support, actually, on both sides of the aisle. So
that is fantastic. I'm actually looking at your Facebook page, Regnant Populist 2012, The People Rule.
Yes.
Wonderful. Hooking up.
Well,
we've
changed it. The one thing that has changed from that 2012 thing that's now is now we have actually some enforcement as well. If you break the law, it specifies what you're to be charged with and so forth and so on, which we left that out before because we were trying to give them incentive to come in and, let them save a little face, if you will, but then we weren't getting the support behind all of that. And so we said, okay, if you're going to be that away about it, we're going to, you know, we're going to nail you to the wall. And we did.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So where exactly, I'm browsing through some of the web stuff. Where exactly are you with it now? What status is it?
Okay. The legislature, when they're in session, they are allowed to recommend three things to go on the ballot as constitutional amendments each session that go into the next election cycle. Now, in this state, we also have a referendum process where you can go and gather signatures, so much from a percentage of the gubernatorial thing, and you can get your own constitutional amendment on a ballot in the next election cycle if you go gather the signatures. In this state, it's about 8,000, just shy of that, to get a constitutional amendment on the ballot. So if you wrote one and you wanted it on there, if you got the signatures, you know, it can go on there and be voted on. But that's how ours went on, was it came through the legislature like that, which they knew we were fully prepared to go get the signatures to get it on there. So it was better for them to do it, to make them, you know, give themselves a way to save face about it, instead of look, you know, saying to the public, we want that money, you know, and stuff. So, and the real people that are doing the nuts and bolts work at the legislature here in this state understand that if they don't, you know, they understand these lobbyists are not their friends, and the longer they're in there, they realize that, and they're not doing anything. So I'm just as happy about the lobbyists not being able to even buy them a cup of coffee as the money, to tell you the truth. They can't take
as
them.
As am I. I mentioned that earlier in the show, too. My big thing about Citizens United, Greg, is obviously it was horrible what it did to open up our election process to all that money. But I was glad in the sense that it brought the beacon back on money in politics, because lobbying money doesn't just even go to the elected people. It goes to our government workers on top of everything else. So that has been going on for 200 years as well. And it needs to be stopped just as much as anything else, because it's influencing from the back door, especially when you're when you're not in an election cycle and you're trying to get laws passed. When you're actually working, it is the lobbying money that is interfering with that process more so than the election money.
Yes, and it's much better to have it to where your ideas win the argument, as opposed to how much you can grease the palm of the legislator, you know, getting them all kinds of every trips and, you know, meals and junkets, all this other stuff. You know, we've legislated that out of there. That's not happening anymore in this state.
That's fantastic.
And every state can do this. And we really hope that this grows. And once they see ours working, that the other states will do the same thing, because they certainly can. It's polls. We ran a couple different polls on this, and it's over 70% that we're going to get in a vote on this. And it's probably higher than that.
Greg, I love that. You've just given me a whole bunch of brand new hope.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. I'm so happy you called. Please forever keep calling. And
I will.
That is the best news I've heard. That's the best news I've heard about getting money out of politics in a long time. How about it, ladies?
Well, and you know, Ginny had to go. But but I'm thinking, you know, Oregon just passed a statewide, you know, initiative on against Citizens United. But I mean, Oregon would totally go for something like this.
Yeah, I
and
agree.
So, I mean,
I agree with that. Oregon, absolutely. Wow.
You know, I'm looking for, like, how do I get the wording and so I can get it into the hands of the right people? Because, you know, we'll have to do our own version and make sure it fits into whatever our constitutional laws are here. Because I'm still new to the state, but you know, I know California is a lot better. But that would be, you know, every state has their own constitutional amendment process.
Definitely. And you have to do your homework on this, because you're going to run up against resistance, without a doubt.
Right.
You know, we fully expect when the campaign commercials start before the election cycle in 2014, we fully expect the airwaves to go insanely nuts trying to keep this from happening. We're not under disillusionment in that regard, but
who are the usual suspects that will oppose this? Is it
Well, in any of the lobbying organizations, corporations are going to scream and holler and say, "Oh no, we have, you know, we can, you know, give money." Unions, possibly, but the unions are actually better with it than you think, because it actually frees up dollars. If they don't got to spend all this money doing other stuff, they can give it back to the union members. You know, so the unions are actually, a lot of them are behind what we're trying to do. A lot of them were worried about. Common Cause is on board with this, by the way. There are several other organizations that are on board nationally. I believe they're listed on the Facebook page, and if they're not, I will make sure that gets corrected tomorrow morning.
RPArkansas.org is your website, it looks like.
Yes, I believe it is.
I've been looking for your website, so... Because it doesn't show up in a Google search, just so you know. You need some help with that.
Okay. Well, thank you. Well, we've taken a breather, honestly, right now, because the heavy lifting of getting it on the ballot and getting what we wanted for the time being has been done. What we're probably going to move into the mode of is campaign strategies of how do we combat what the stuff is and the lies that will be bombarded into the public's, you know,
right.
How we're going to combat that. So, and we will have to, you know, it'll be like, if you don't answer the charges, you know what happens. And I want to say that I had written a note several months ago to the coffee party about free and equal and stuff. And when I saw that Christina was going to be on, I was just really, really tickled. And I want to thank you again for having her on. This was great. And the Arkansas Caucus had recommended, to the national team several months ago to get in touch with the caucus coffee party. And we were trying to make contact with you guys, saying, I knew this was a natural fit, because ever since the coffee party was founded, I have been wanting to be a little bit more involved with it, quite frankly. But in Arkansas, we didn't have any great participation. And the closest thing to me was Memphis at the time. And so,
sure.
And then I got involved with Occupy Little Rock. So, naturally, that took up quite a bit of my time. So
yeah, I was going to say, that just means we need a chapter there for you in Little Rock. Hey, I have a friend who lives there. I'll put you guys in touch with each other.
Oh, that's really great. You gave me a segue to do the coffee party civil message to promote all our shows, so we can get you participating in Arkansas, participating with coffee party that much more. I also want to facilitate
while I'm on here with you to get you guys is to be a guest on our Occupy Little Rock radio show that we have. We've been on the air for a year and a half. And we're on a 100,000-watt FM radio station. We do a show once a week. And Occupy Earth and several live stream people pick us up, and we go out to about 200,000. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, I nominate Janine Loudon for that right there, I'll tell you. I definitely nominate her.
I'm a musician. That's how I earn my living. And so I don't get to do the program every week and stuff because of Saturday gigs and stuff.
Sure.
But we do the gig from 6 until 7 Central Time on Saturdays. It's on KABF. You can listen online at KABF.org. And we would love to have you guys on, because there are a bunch of us that are quite familiar with the coffee party.
Well, that's wonderful to hear as well.
I'll put you guys in touch with my friend Bud.
It's all about that networking, isn't it?
It sure is.
And again, I want to say I'm really glad that Christina was on, and just bigger and better things. And I will be in Los Angeles in October, so hopefully I will get to see you guys there.
Well, actually, you will. You'll definitely get to see me, because I am directly involved with Free and Equal Election Foundation as well now. I am an active part of it every day, just like I am with the coffee party. As long as I can fit you guys in around work, it's okay. Like you say, you got to do your shows. You know how that goes. But
I actually do.
But we got to be active, as they say. You got to be active. You know, and I want to make sure. And like Greg called in, please, the lines are open. Our number is 646-929-2495. You call in if you want to talk. Hit one, and we'll invite you on. And you guys run the show. You know how it is, right around our subject matter. And we have with us Greg from Arkansas, telling us about how they're getting rid of money in politics. And I don't know, Greg. We don't want to let you go because I need that tether. I don't like money in politics at all, but I love it.
Bobby, don't worry. I just found him on Facebook. We'll do friend requests.
Oh, we've got him. All right. Oh, we've got him. He's locked in now.
Yeah. A story I often tell, and I told it, I gave a speech July 4th here at Little Rock in front of the state capitol. We had a rally here that was just a rally about the Fords. It was not a partisan thing. There were groups from, there were Tea Partiers and Occupiers and Libertarians, and just everybody was there. And I gave a speech, and my speech was about unification and solutions, and it wasn't about, you know, complaining about the NSA and all the normal things that a lot of people have on their minds these days. And I talked a lot about free and equal. But the story I told them about a long time ago when I walked into a voting booth, and I closed the, and I looked, and I had researched the candidates, and I looked there, and I just had a really sick feeling in my stomach because I saw a D and an R, and those names, I like either one of them, and I didn't want to vote for either one of them. And I was stuck, you know, just not vote, you know, for either one of them and leave that blank, or do I hold my nose, or do I flip a coin, or what do I do? And we have to give more voices and more choices to the public at large, no matter if it's Green Party or independents. I'm an independent myself, but if it's Libertarians or whatever it is, you know, we have to have those things that are there. And there are plenty of people who could be involved with elected office that would do a wonderful job. Like Christina says, there are many more honest people than there are crooks in the world, and that's so very true. And I've never gotten a standing ovation for a speech before until then. So I was really happy about that. And it was great to see that whole spectrum of people realizing that, yes, you know, we have to come together as a people if this is ever going to change.
Fantastic. And I have to tell you, Debbie Lynn and Greg, you already are my friend on Facebook, Greg. How about that? We already did it. We already did it. Didn't know we did it. We're connected. I love it.
That can be true. I'm guilty of having so many that, well, the way Facebook works, you don't get to see all the updates, everybody, so it's impossible to stay up with everybody. You know,
yeah.
But I do answer all the emails and all the messages and all the things I do. You know, I get back to everybody who gets in touch with me. So
you said that you guys are taking a little bit of a break, getting ready for your strategy. So what is the next thing? What's the next big thing for you?
Well, for me personally or for Regnant Pop?
Well, for both. I mean, you're obviously an active activist, as they say, and obviously we're going to see each other at the United We Stand Fest. But overall, what is the next big thing for you in activism and as well as with the amendment process?
Well, the next big thing right now that I'm concentrating almost all of my energies on, well, is I'm still heavily involved with Occupy Little Rock. I still help with the radio show and things. And even though we don't have a protest site, we're still heavily involved. We have several issues here that we're dealing with on a local basis. And that's how we approached our Occupy site, was that we can make a difference here in our local community. We can support Occupy Wall Street and getting the money out of politics and seeing the banksters go down and all that. But, you know, we've got such a talented group of people here that was assembled for Occupy Little Rock, from, you know, environmental scientists, teachers, just I couldn't tell you all the different clergy, all the, you know, support. We were a totally sufficient site. We had solar power, wind power. We didn't depend on anybody for anything. We had a city is essentially what we had. And that group of people has reached out to the community. And if you'll see our Facebook page there and stuff, we're involved with our local politics and our city government very heavily. There's a watershed issue here. There's an issue about they're wanting to build a tech park here, but they're wanting to take homes by eminent domain to do so. And we're saying no, because tax money is being used to do it, and they're paying taxes to get their own homes taken away, and we're defeating that, you know, which is run by the Chamber of Commerce here. It's the Occupy side. Free and equal, obviously, you've been through already, and I'm 1,000% behind all of that as far as that goes. And then personally, music-wise and things, I'm winding down how much live playing I do, and I want to get back into writing more music and doing things for film and television again. So,
fantastic. Fantastic. The Occupy movement here in Atlanta is pretty substantial. I participate with them, and they're not getting through the doors of the government as much as in other places, but they are making an appearance. They're actually at the Capitol right now. They're doing a large march today. And I know that last report that I got right before the show went on this evening is they're at about 1,200 people already going, and they have some major activists that are out there. Joe Beasley being one of them, who I happened to be able to meet about a month ago, a longtime civil rights activist here out of Atlanta. So their voices are heard and they're very active, but unfortunately they're not involved with the legal process here. It just seems to be really tough. A lot of banging your head against the wall here, but the process moves on. Atlanta, of course, is a major activist city. And especially when it comes to civil rights, but it is tough. And I'm glad to hear that you guys are having successes there, without a doubt.
We are. We have persevered in this, and it's been a very tough road. I won't tell you it hadn't been, because when I got involved, the narrative on television, if you ask somebody what Occupy was about, they immediately pointed to Oakland, California, and those problems, and so the perception to the public of what we really were and what we were there doing and stuff was a major hurdle that took months and months and months to clear and stuff for mm-hmm. people to take us seriously for what we were really doing, what we stood for, what we were trying to change, what we were actually doing. And when they sat down and took that time, 5 or 10 minutes with us, I never saw anybody that came onto to the protest site that we had in Little Rock that didn't walk away saying, hey, what do you guys need? How can I help? I mean, we had people show up yelling and screaming, get a job, blah, and we calm them down, get them a cup of coffee or some lemonade or something and say, what questions do you have? We'll answer any you got. And I never saw one of them leaving still be angry. They were, every one of them left like, wow, I thought this was something entirely different. And so that just that one-on-one connection that you have to make with people, we were very good at doing that. So I'm very proud of that. There was just not me. There were several of us involved in it, and it was a day-to-day thing and so forth. So, and in fact, Occupy Wall Street, Buffalo, there were so many cities that we were doing such a good job, and our reputation got so good, they were sending people to us to come stay with us for a week to learn how we were doing it.
That's always nice.
Yeah, so, they were wanting the plans. How did you build a wind generator? our wind generator, it had enough power to charge up all the cell phones and run all the laptops on the site, just in the wind generator.
Awesome.
Storing it in a car battery. Well, actually, several car batteries. Then we had somebody donate an entire solar power an array and stuff that was. I in the office at the protest site, I didn't run a laptop. I ran my desktop. We had a dome built. If you go back and look at some pictures and stuff of the site and everything, you'll see, my gosh, that was a little city that was there,
Right.
Stuff. It really was. And we had the support of the community. We had the support of the police force, everything as far as that's concerned. So, but we stood our ground. We were evicted off of our site because they pulled our permit, and there is litigation about that. I have been arrested 3 times. And so forth, but I have beat the rap as far as that's concerned, and I do have a wonderful civil rights attorney that is one of the most well-known civil rights attorneys in this country, John Hall, and he represents me as well. He wrote a book a few years back on constitutional law that if you're a law student, it's required reading. So that's my attorney. I'm pretty happy about that. So we're pressing forward. That part of it is a little slower, obviously, but we are pressing forward on that. So we're having.
Well, that's great, Greg. That is fantastic. And I want to take a moment if you want to hold with us just for a second. I got to do some work, as you know, in the radio business. We got to make sure we promote the subjects that are necessary. And I just want to remind everybody first, of course, it's we're on Coffee Party Radio here. We are a grassroots nonpartisan movement that aims to restore democracy in America. We are member driven. We are not tied to any corporations. All our support and all our money comes from our membership. And we certainly want to have people, more people joining the coffee party, in our baseline issues. And then of course we have our four coffee party radio shows, that we do, on Tuesday nights. We have the Middle Ground with Michael Charney and Eric Beiler. On Thursday, we have Janine Loudon and Debbie Lynn Molyneux with Lunch with Loudon. And then on Saturday, we have Politics Done Right with Alberto Willis. And I can tell you that every one of those shows and all the people that are involved and the host of this show, Dan Aronson, for Press One Democracy, are all about the people and all about doing what's right in this country and fixing what's wrong with our political situation and the way that liberty is being taken away from us, et cetera. And we always want to hear from you and all the time, and on this show and tonight as well. You can call in. The number is 646-929-2495. You call in if you want to listen. That's fine. We want to hear from you as well. Press one and jump into the conversation. We'll bring you on board. We do want to cover another subject as well. And Greg, if you'd like to stay with us on it, I'd love to have you stick around for a while.
Sure.
We had a very important situation lately. Actually, it's been going on for a little while.
Hey,
we're talking about the
Bobby.
Yes.
I just need to interject one thing before we move on here, and that is that if people do want to join, become a member of Coffee Party to support us in this wonderful and the wonderful work that we do, you can do that at our website at coffeepartyusa.com. Thank you.
Yes, that's right. Thank you, Lillian. I didn't say that, did I? And we're on Facebook. Join the Coffee Party movement. And Coffee Party has a lot of pages on Facebook. And that is the most important one. And thank you, Debbie, for pointing it out. And I'm a rookie at this. You have to understand.
Got your back. Got your back on
that. Now, so we wanted to spend some time talking about and the way we saw this, one of the ways we saw it in many ways, the Sanford trial and Trayvon Martin and the Zimmerman verdict that happened the other night that is weighing so heavily on us for many reasons. And we wanted to have a responsible participation in that subject. We're certainly not trying to be part of this media blow-up that's been going on, or get into the discussion of the facts of the trial. But what we thought about and what came to us collectively, actually, was how much more, again, money is influencing another aspect of our lives in the criminal justice system. So we were looking at subject matter as kind of a segue into it. And one of the things that came up is that the privatization of our prison system and our criminal justice system overall, the war on drugs, which is a prominent issue out there right now, especially with its no-hold-bar situation and its mandatory minimums and the fact that they're putting away people for marijuana, for example, and they have been for years when all this really blew up and during the Reagan administration. And the privatization of prisons is just another way where corporations are now going to make money by having their foot on our neck, is how I put it, actually. I mean, that might not be the most civil way to say it, but it just seems to be that way.
Well, and this is why I was really interested to what Christina was talking about earlier, because when she was talking about making government smaller, because there are some things that we do need government for. And so there has been this tendency towards privatizing things that personally I think should be government function instead of profiteering function. And yet people think, private industry can do it better. And it's like, but anytime you add a profit motive in, to me, it warps the system. And the same can be said for unions and union jobs and everything that can be, you know, so I don't want to say that it's one or the other. But there's this sense of entitlement that starts to happen instead of service. And when we remember that, you know, that our safety and security that, you know, from the police and sheriff's departments to the jails to the prison system is all about our safety and security, but that gets tweaked so that it ends up being pitted against funding for education because, we have to feel safe and secure in our homes. And then all of a sudden, you know, you end up with a system where, you know, I go down because a friend of mine is an immigrant, and 15 years ago he had a one-day crime spree. And because of the Patriot Act, this is how crazy this all is. The Patriot Act says that if you are on a green card and you commit a felony, you can be deported at any time. So at 19 years old, he commits a felony. He does a plea bargain. He serves his time. It's 11 months. He gets out. He never commits another crime. He gets married to a citizen. He has three kids. Is working, paying his taxes, doing everything we would think a person should be doing. And the immigration department comes and picks him up, takes him away to a corporately owned immigration prison in Arizona within 4 hours, I swear to God, within 4 hours from the time they pick him up. That place they keep full at 99% capacity. And it's a racket.
Man.
I mean, you could walk in there I could talk to the guards about the racket that it is. They don't want to be there. They know that the minute that they release somebody, they go back across the border. You know, they take them back across the border, they release them, and they're trying again, and they're going to be there again in 2 weeks if they get caught. It is a racket for profiteering.
You know, the one thing that you mentioned that I want to highlight is when you talk about certain things that the government should do, the first part of your comment, I want to first highlight that I believe is very important. The criminal justice system is an area that is solely something that government does. It's one of those unique areas in our society that is solely the government. Aspects of it, it is actually all three branches, if you think about it. The legislature makes the law, the executive is executing, and you're standing in front of a judge. They're all working in concert. So to privatize that I wholeheartedly agree with you. It is the responsibility. If we're going to put people in jail, then we need to be the ones to maintain it without question. If we are going to have, I want to have a civil society. I want to have a criminal-free society. But I do not want to have people make money off it, no. And I'll elaborate on your point a little bit more. Before the privatization of prisons happened to the degree that it is now, there was already privatization working in concert with the federal prison industries Bureau of Prisons by the name of Unicor. And the federal prison industries is an entity of itself that is bidding on government contracts against other private entities. And if they win the contract, then their employees are prisoners. And this has been going on
for a very long time. Yes.
Okay, and this is really important. So it kind of was the window in my mind. And I don't know this for a fact. This is just me analyzing something, but it kind of was the window in my mind to set up this privatization because that one works so well. Now you have, for example, federal prison industries. They build furniture. They environmentally test the adequacy of components for military hardware. Now think about that. They have an environmental test lab in, I think, 5 or 6 different federal prisons as part of the federal prison industries where inmates write test report results of wire harnesses for tanks, for example. Now, this is all factual. Please check it out for yourselves. You know me. Don't take anybody's word for it. But I assure you that this is true. So they're charging, for example, $20,000 for this prisoner to take this wire harness and put it in a refrigeration unit, and they'll run a test however long they keep it in there, and it's a real test, you know, to see if the wire harness will withstand temperatures that are high or low, because of their uses. And then they'll come out, and then the prisoner will write the reports and send it. Now, I work for the military, and I see these things go across my desk, and that's where they came from, for example. Now, in order for them to do that, they have to bid on the work. So they're doing these tests of these items on products that they're creating in the manufacturing part of the federal prison industries in that particular prison. So this is, if you remember the era of the $50
okay.
hammer and the $500 hammer and the $600 toilet seat, this is where that came from, because it's a laundromat. You had the Department of Defense sending all this big money to federal prison industries, and they were not paying it to their employees. So it was a laundromat.
Okay, so if I wanted to be, finish your thought, and then I have some dots I want to connect.
No, no, go ahead. No, please ask, because I could go on forever about Unicor.
because I'm seeing here that in order to support our military industrial complex, they need a labor force that will work at slave wages. And then we have a justice system that is unfairly administered, I think is the politest way I can put it.
Sure.
So, which is not to say that criminals aren't put behind bars, because of course they are. But between the three strikes laws and the mandatory sentencing, we have people that are in there for horrendous sentences that don't fit the crime. And we have a disproportionate number of minorities that are sentenced much more harshly than we do people who are either Caucasian or Asian or whatever. So all of a sudden we're back to like this old plantation style system, if you will, through both the military
Remember they took away probation and parole, just to jump in real quick to add to what you're saying. Go on.
And then when they get out of prison, assuming that they do, they no longer have their right to vote, so they can't even vote in somebody else to make new laws. So we're making laws, but I'm just connecting these dots here. So all the way around, we have a lack of representation to begin with. We have laws that are being passed that, for mandatory sentencing and stand your ground and whatever else under the name of safety and security that gets passed that actually doesn't do squat for actually like reducing crime, but actually increases violence. And then we have these profiteers using prison labor for slave labor. And then when people come out, they actually have lost their right to vote.
Yeah,
and
now
so
that's not everywhere, but that isn't the majority of the country. There's a lot of states that have that. That is correct.
Unless you petition, there are places where you can petition to get your votes back, your voting rights back. But it's a process.
That is correct. So,
it depends
on the if you right, so and it right that as well. So if you the dots are crazy. I don't mean to chuckle, but they drive me crazy.
There's money to be made at every point, at every step along the way.
That's right. Now, you think about the polarization of the media, for example, what brought us here to this discussion, Trayvon Martin, Zimmerman trial, and how the media has blown this up to whatever proportion. Remember, when they came out with these laws, we had the polarization of when a parolee went and murdered somebody on parole, for example. So they eliminated the parole and probation from those. Just deal with the feds. Ronald Reagan created a Federal Sentencing Guideline Commission, which essentially was a body that was not covered under the Constitution. And they created the Sentencing Guideline Commissions, which was supposed to be in the purview of the legislature. Here's this independent body that comes up with the Sentencing Guideline Commissions. And when they do their investigations for sentencing, they go all the way back to the egg. In the Federal Sentencing Guidelines, for example. And they created mandatory minimums. They also created no parole system and a good time, basis. And then they also put a parole-type, probation-type thing at the end of every sentence. So if you got sentenced to 10 years, let's say, you would do however many years you would do minus whatever you would earn in good time. And then after that, you would have to still serve your good time in probation. And then after that, when you got to the 10-year max, then this is going on now. And then you have to do another probation parole thing after that. And that's if it's not called special, which is another thing that they did was special. And then, of course, they put the drugs into it because of the gang and the gang and the cracks of the 80s when it was developed in 83, 84, 85, when all this was going on.
Right.
So that was another aspect. And then they got the three strikes laws passed in places like California, which was probably the most discussed place where it was happening was in Los Angeles. A lot of the shoplifting guy getting life. I seem to recall something about that.
The three strikes law actually originated in Fresno, California, by one of my neighbors when I lived there, and it was from
his daughter
being killed in my neighborhood. By a parolee who should not have been let out, who was a violent parolee. And he's the one that started it, and then it swept the nation.
Sure, sure. And so all of that was going on, and now, as you say, as you're connecting the dots, and you start with the media. You know, I mentioned something, for example, on how the media is dividing us. Because somebody gave me a statistic earlier today that I actually looked up and confirmed. There, 90%, since I think it's 2007 to 2011 was the window of all the black deaths by murder that have happened in this country. 90% of them had occurred by blacks. Well, the perpetrator, the murderer, was a black person.
Okay.
He put it up because he was responding to the racial problems that were being discussed about the Trayvon Commission. So I said, I would like to know what the statistics are all the way around. So we both went into somebody I know, and we both went into it, and we found out that all the white murders that happen, 83% of them, are done by white murderers. So it is an anomaly, was what his point was.
An anomaly.
That there is racial murder going on in this country, and that they're polarizing it. Meanwhile, they're not talking about the number of murders that there were in the black community between 7 and 11, or might be 4 and 11, was 262,000. So it's got to be 2004 and 11. And 90% of them were black on black. And the same time period, there was less murders of white people by about 50,000, I think it was, but 83% was one on white. So it's an anomaly that there's racial murder going on. So the way they're blowing up the Trayvon case is actually disproportionate to the facts. So,
mind you, nothing to do
with the justice of the circumstance, but it's disproportionate to the facts. So again, we're connecting dots.
Well, and most murders are committed by people who know each other.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. We know that. I mean, that's been well settled. But meanwhile, we have a situation that was developing. I mean, they obviously. You know, the conspiracy theorist side, and I say that lightly.
Right.
I don't say that heavily. I say that lightly because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that so-called paranoid conspiracy theorists talk about that is 100% true or partially true. So I say that phrase lightly, and I probably maybe shouldn't even use it. But one of the theories, we'll put it that way, that is out there is that the reason that they're polarizing it so much is to give an opportunity to have violence so there can be martial law imposed and things like that. Well, you can really see that in a way by the way. I mean, it has been the media has been nuts with this issue from both sides.
I've worked both in advertising and I've also worked for a newspaper.
Sure.
And so part of that experience knows that the media only gets paid when people watch it. So, or read it in the case of the newspaper. And so their motivation is to get eyeballs so they can have advertisers pay them money. You know, so they're looking for eyeballs or ears if it's the radio. And it is really, you know, so they're, you know, they say that they're there to inform, but really they're there, you know, if you look at what their continued existence is based on, Their continued existence is based on being able to get people to watch them or listen to them or read them. And in order to do that, they have to create drama.
Mm.
You know.
Agreed. You know what, I don't want to trivialize the issues in the case. You know, and I'm not trying to say that I agree. But what we're talking about is real, without question. You know, we were talking earlier, and I had mentioned that there was $48 million that was spent on advertising when Nancy Grace was covering the trial in Florida for the Amy woman, whose last name I can't remember because I don't watch that
Thank
stuff.
Thank God. Thank God you can't remember it.
Yes, because I don't watch it.
Okay?
I won't do it. Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. You know, so what we're talking about is real. And everybody, 646-929-2495, please jump in anytime.
We're having a fabulous conversation by ourselves, but we are.
And actually, Greg has got his hand up, and I see that.
His hand is Greg Diffelman. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, there he is. Okay. I was noticing that. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's okay. We have 8% of the population in the world, and we have 20% of the population of the prisoners of the world, and that's by no accident and stuff. So the statistics also that you were talking about, so a lot of websites have been promoting this thing about racial crimes, and they're promoting this figure of 88 to 91% of the racial crime is black on white. And that flies, that's the piece they're pulling out of that racial thing that flies in the face of what you had to say with your statistics. That's the part they're not telling you. They're not using the real statistics. They're cherry-picking a statistic about racial crime and trying to say, oh, this is what it is for all of it. And that's the narrative that's being driven, unfortunately. And it's just another wedge issue. It really is.
It is.
Terrible.
It is.
Yeah.
It really is.
It is.
Dividing us is so important to them because, of course, they're successful in continuing the agenda. And all our talking about the prison thing, Greg brought up something that we left out, Debbie Lynn, is that we have more people in prison than anybody else, more than Russia,
than
China, more than Iran.
More than some country's entire population.
Absolutely.
There was another company that's called Correction Corporation of America, CCA. They're heavily involved in California, and they're the reason the hunger strike is going on right now. Because 2 years ago they said, okay, we'll make these changes, and then nothing was done.
So
they made the changes to increase solitary confinement? Or is there something going on that the news media is not reporting on again?
Well, there are over 30,000 prisoners right now in the system in California who are on hunger strike.
Yeah, I've heard that, and I've heard the reason for that was because of the solitary confinement rules. Is there other motivation?
That is some of it. But the overall general, they had several other complaints 2 years ago as well. That was the really big one that resonated that was there. And they had a program that I watched last night on television. I forgot the channel that I watched it on, to be honest with you, but I saw, and I honestly don't even turn on a television except I was at a friend's house, and so I did turn it on and turn that on, and that's what came on, and I watched it for a few minutes, and it was talking about that prison situation out there and stuff, and they showed what the conditions are to be what they call a SHU, you know, the special housing unit situation, which is a solitary confinement thing. And these people are literally in cages with concrete floors and concrete benches outside. I wouldn't be very happy with that either.
Right.
What happened to reforming people who go to prison, making them better individuals for when they come out, they don't reoffend? We put them in a situation where they come out worse.
Because our generation allowed us to be sold down the river of that reform was not worth, and we needed to. I mean, this is our generation that caused it. When Ronald Reagan became president, they promoted the. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Having lived in California for 20 years, and Ronald Reagan was governor first before he was president.
Yes, he was.
You know, all the mental health facilities were closed. All the hospitals,
yep.
all the state hospitals were closed. So we have a lot of mentally ill people and they're now in jail or prison. And punitive became much more popular than rehabilitation, punitive sentencing. And then the other thing that's happened is the correctional officers union is so powerful in the state of California because they are protecting their jobs, and they basically, if you go against them, if you're running for office in the state legislature and you go against the correctional officers union, you're going to lose. If you have any political capital at all, you cannot go against the correctional officers union in the state of California without losing your political capital, period. It is that serious. It's like the Teamsters in the 70s. It's that
wow.
serious. And then the other point, you know, when I did run for office 10 years ago in California, one of the things that I learned then that still appalls me, and I'm sure it's done in more places in California, and we'll get to our new caller here in just a second, is that the prison system in California looks at fourth grade reading levels. They look at the education system and they say, okay, what's the reading levels right now for fourth grade? And they can tell by how many kids are literate in fourth grade when they're 10 years old. They know in 10 years how many more beds they're going to need in prison. And that's how they plan how many new prisons they're going to build.
Yep.
Amazing.
It's a terrible situation.
They didn't say, oh, well, let's go and increase literacy rate. They said, oh, here's an opportunity for us to have more power, more prison guards, more money in our system in the prison. Instead of saying, what would make a better society for California? Let's go actually increase literacy. No, that's not what they did. Makes me absolutely ill.
We have a new caller on there. Let me see if I can bring in this new caller. I think it's a Skype call, I want to say.
Hello.
It's GIRANDIB.
That is me.
Welcome to...
That's me.
That's you.
That's you.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name's Rudy. I'm calling from Florida.
Hey, Rudy. How you doing?
It says press 1 for democracy, and I pressed it. Give me some democracy.
We could all use some of that, couldn't we?
Hey, I wasn't talking
Absolutely.
To you. Niggers. Trayvon Martin deserved to die.
I'll
okay,
take
so
representative republic, if I could, please.
Yeah, so anyway, back
I think
to
we just had a heckler.
That's
so.
Okay. I have to have my first heckler. Why not?
hey, you haven't arrived until you have a heckler.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I know I've had them before, but it wasn't in this medium. But that's okay. You know, what you were mentioning, Greg, about the Reformation. I mean, again, we were turned into a punitive society. You know, they used those instances of, well, people on parole committing crimes, and they pushed us to, and we fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. We all were on board. You know, the gang wars that were going on in Los Angeles that started when crack was developed, all of the murders that were happening with Blue and Red. I mean, they pushed us into that, and we fell for it, hook, line, and sinker as a generation. And now
right.
here we are, you know, and again, it's almost like the same argument that I tell people. I says, you know, the majority of the public were all on board for the Patriot Act, and very few of us were against it. And now here we are.
Mm-hmm.
We were so, you know, we're not sitting down and being a little bit more, I don't know, introspective is the wrong word, but we're not analyzing correctly. We're not looking at the long-term picture of the decisions that we're making when the media is selling us these bill of goods. And I think we're finally getting it for the most part and noticing it more. And that's why we are where we are from the standpoint of movements and activism, because as much as it is not being covered, I think all of us know, both on this call, on this show, and in the chat room, and throughout our organization that we're involved with, that there's a lot going on out there, and a lot
right.
of people are involved in it. And you know, just it's Monday again, so we know that we're going to get another report about Moral Monday, from North
mm-hmm.
Carolina.
Right.
We just saw what was happening in Texas, and we haven't even touched upon those things, and they're some of the bigger things going on. I saw a picture a little while ago of what's going on in Times Square this evening about the trial. It's moving. And as Christina said earlier, when you get the young people involved, you got to pay attention because they and with social media and the computers and stuff, they know way more about it than we do. They know how to use it better.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know that typing was an elective when I went through school, and look where we are now. So
right.
I do.
If you can't do it, hey, if you can't do it with your thumbs, Bobby, I mean, you're just too old.
I'm so inspired now, let me tell you. I know what to work for. You're bad. You're bad.
I'm sorry. I just had to throw that one in there.
Well, we need to wind down the show. And again, I want to say thank you, Greg, for being on. I appreciate it. I'm glad to have you. A lot of good things that you were talking about got me totally excited with the money and politics thing. I'm going to read every word of it, I'm sure, by tomorrow morning, because there's been so little progress. And we know how long it takes for change to happen, and what you've told us about this evening is major, major, absolutely. I'm glad you called in, and I want to say thank you again for Christina Tobin being on. Great conversation about a great cause, and of course I want to thank Debbie Lynn Molyneux always for sharing the show with me and helping me through the turmoil. And remember, and I'm going to try and remember how to do this correctly, because I tell people I can be trained, you got to go to coffeepartyusa.com and join. We are member-driven. We are a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, you know, one of the real ones. We totally survive on member input financially and from an activist standpoint. And we want you to be involved. And remember, we have four shows that we do. We have The Middle Ground on Tuesday with Michael Charney and Eric Violet. That's 8 o'clock Eastern time. We have Lunch with Loudon Thursday afternoon, 12 o'clock Pacific time, 3 o'clock Eastern time, with Janine Loudon and Debbie Lynn Molyneux. And then Saturday, we have Egberto Willis and a group of regulars that are on there talking stuff on politics done right, and it's 1 o'clock Eastern time. And again, all the people that work at the Coffee Party are out there working hard for you and for themselves to make our country a better place. And this is Bobby Rodrigo thanking Dan Arison for allowing me to host the show this evening. And again, thank you, Devlin, for keeping me on target, and I think we covered some good ground tonight. What do you say?
I think so, and I want to thank Greg and Christina, myself, and the chat room. Rusak has been really active in the chat room. I had a nice conversation with him. So thanks, Greg, for your additions there, and next time call in and talk to us live. So we appreciate callers. And when you're ready, I'll start the music out.
Yeah, go right ahead. And good night, everybody. And like I said earlier, be about it. And Coffee Party on.